Hey guys, just wanted to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
On the morning of August 4th, 1892, Andrew Borden was found dead in his home.
Law enforcement personnel arrived and found a gruesome murder.
This is the Lizzie Borden house.
We went back to the scene with former crime scene investigator Aaron Rubis.
His head is turned on the pillow here.
Lizzie's father had been struck in the face 10 times. Her stepmother hit from behind 19 times. Criminalist Andrew Schweigart.
It seems like the most likely murder weapon was a hatchet with a 3.5-inch blade.
And the only people in the house at the time, Lizzie and the housekeeper.
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan Larry, Spring-Heeled Josh, bling, 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 and the Illumimami herself, Miss April. And on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls or giraffes, Lizzie Borden.
Let me think about it. Violation, no doubt about it. Men on the run, men under fire. They about to burn them up. The drones have been surrounded. Click, 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 boom, pound it. Click, click, hashtag, pound sign it. It's on your Tinder map, co-sign it. But when they come for you, now I just open your mouth and lion. Big bear, little human, lot of salt. A little cumin,
add it to the pot. Shoop Kitchen Studio 2022, Rad Dad, also of the year 2022, with the skeptic, the mom, the beard. We're going to talk Lizzie Borden. Oh boy. Our bigger episodes, non-therapy episodes, always get intense, but I got to read a little rhyme real quick to you guys. Lizzie.
Can we jump rope while we're doing this?
I mean, you can if you want. Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks when she saw what she had done. She gave her father 41. Close enough.
That was 38.
It is a old-timey rhyme.
Man, that's okay. That's 81 whacks. She's got a damn fine arm.
Yeah.
Like, that's no some stamina right task. There.
If we're being real, it was more like 29. Yeah.
That's still some good whacking.
Right.
Just saying. All right, folks. Well, obviously, we have things to talk about, episodes to get into, but we'd like to do a little talk, little action on the podcast. Mm-hmm. What's up, Lawrence?
What a week. Mm-hmm. So, it started out Friday. I get a text from my dad.
Oh boy.
He and my stepmom got COVID.
Oh no.
Oh.
And we were supposed to go to a family reunion on Sunday. Now, Aaron had been at my dad's a few days earlier.
Oh no.
Right. So we're like, okay, we've been exposed.
Right.
But we tested negative. But my dad is having a rough time of it. Mm-hmm. He's in his 70s. Keeps himself in good shape, but he's been triple vax and all that stuff. But he's really wiped out from it. So
I've heard this new strain is a tough one.
So that happened. And it's like, all right, we probably shouldn't go to the family reunion because a lot of those, what happened is they went to a wedding of my cousins and they're pretty sure that's where they got it.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So we're like, well, those same people are going to be at the family reunion. So we're like, yeah, we noped out. And so then Saturday, my sister is admitted into the hospital. She's pregnant.
Okay.
But her blood pressure was like through the roof.
Ooh.
Which I guess is a thing that can happen when you're a little old. She's in her late 30s having your first kid. I guess that's the thing that can happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then Saturday night, we get that storm.
Oh, that's right.
That was nasty, too.
We woke up to the sound of the neighbor's tree falling into their house.
Oh, no.
That and it was like, we heard the snap and the bam. Mm-hmm. We woke up. We're like, what the fuck was that? And we looked out the window, and we got what like is called a microburst in our mm-hmm. neighborhood. So our trees were going left, right, up, like mm-hmm. everywhere. We thought we were like, it's a fucking tornado.
Yeah.
So we booked it down in the basement till it all passed through, mm-hmm. came back. I mean, we lost our power immediately. That was Saturday night. Sunday, we have no power for like pretty much the whole day till mm-hmm. the very end. Thankfully, we got it because I was able to get the podcast uploaded. Today... my sister gave birth to a baby boy.
Aww.
So I'm an uncle again.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. That's what they name him.
James.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, James Paul.
Well, congratulations. So it was
up and down, yeah. A little weekend, I guess.
It was a weird weekend. It was busy for us. Like, obviously, the storm was gigantic. We lost power. And, like, it's funny because we've lived in this townhouse now for almost 8 years. Mm-hmm. No, for over 8 years. And we always tell people, like, we're on such a good grid. We've lived here for 8 years and we've lost power like one time. Literally this summer, this is the third time we've lost power. I don't know what's happening, but obviously the storm is...
We end up losing everything in our fridge.
Oh, no.
Because we had power off for so long. And that was like all stuff we just bought.
I know. And that's the thing is I went grocery shopping that day. So my fridge was like stuffed. I was like, oh my God. Okay. At least it's like heavily packed in mm-hmm. there because I buy 2 weeks at a time.
Right.
So it's like all going to stay kind of cold. But yep. And then we had a birthday party on Sunday, which was super fun. Yeah. It's just been really busy. But so Garrett, our oldest, just turned 13. And his newest thing is telling jokes. He really mm-hmm. likes telling jokes.
And there was a time where he would tell us a joke and it'd make no sense.
Yeah. Right. That's a thing kids go through.
I remember hearing some of those.
And
yeah.
This is what is interesting is like kids who are on the spectrum, it's hard for them to understand humor because they take mm-hmm. everything super literally. So to see him like telling and understanding jokes, I'm like, that's so exciting because he's finally like getting mm-hmm. humor.
Yeah.
Right. And so he'll come downstairs occasionally and he'll be like, hey, want to hear a joke? And he'll tell me like, what was he's told me some really like, they very much warrant the like boo sound. That's what I think in my head every time I hear them. Yeah. That one, because I'm like, that was a dad joke from like the depths of the dad verse. Mm-hmm. So this morning he comes down and Josh and I are sitting at the table and he goes, hey, want to hear a joke? I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, sorry.
Lights are flickering. I'm having a neurological episode.
Yep. So he comes downstairs. He says, hey, you want to hear a joke? I said, yep. He goes, what has two legs but can't walk? And I'm like,
I don't know what.
I said, I don't know. And he goes, a guy in a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
We were dying laughing, and then we had to like, this was also a learning moment.
Yep.
Because we had to sit him down. We're like, okay, so here's the thing. There's a thing called dark humor. Mm-hmm. And like your dad and I get it. Mm-hmm. But I said, also when you're telling jokes, I said, make sure that like before you say them out loud that they are not going to offend anyone. I said, because that might be offensive to a person in a wheelchair.
We had to wait till he walked away and I snort laughed.
Oh my God.
I couldn't breathe.
But yeah, it was a beautiful, because he told the punchline and was sitting there like staring at us like yeah, right? Him, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, oh God almighty. And we, as soon as he left, we're like, oh my God, Larry's going to love that.
That's awesome.
That's a Larry joke.
Almost needed like the sound of like the creaky wheelchair, like the that was beautiful.
I can't dance, I can't walk.
That reminds me, did you see the TikTok of the girl who was crowned prom queen and she's wheelchair bound, And for their prom king and queen dance, they did the Ed Sheeran song that the first line is, so your legs don't work.
Was that a prom? I thought I saw that at a wedding or something. Yeah,
and
I saw
the whole crowd at prom just goes,
Boy, that DJ quit. He quit.
Yep.
And then we'll never DJ again.
DJ. I love getting filled in on your lives.
Yes, of course.
Much like a therapy episode, which you should check out the one next week because it might have something to do with the late 19th century because we have a true crime humdinger right here.
Yeehaw.
I would say, what is this? The Casey Anthony of Anne and Green Gables, maybe? Or the Menendez brothers circa Billy the Kid? Because we're going back in time. 1892.
Okay.
And it had a bit of a... I mean, they were older, so we'll get into it. But before we do that, we have to get a bit of a truth corner action happening. A little pull the old Thunderbird to the side of the road and get real.
The horse and buggy.
All right. If you died in 1892, fellow co-hosts...
Might have been seven.
What would be the reason...
I don't even have to do it anymore.
If you had to guess... And, or if you, like I said, I started with the rhyme. If you had to make a rap and or rhyme of your life, what would it be? Does anybody have anything? You can do either or.
Okay.
If you died in 1892, how? And if you had to rap rhyme about your life?
I would die because I was chasing my son off the street because he decided to do monkey dancing in the middle and... I get ran over by a horse and buggy.
Oh.
See, and I thought for sure you'd say you'd die of dysentery.
Just drinking out of puddles.
You know me.
Oh, that's that Josh Shoup over there. He's a real puddle licker.
Yep.
Got hit by a horse and buggy while he was trying to drink that unfiltered puddle goop water.
This isn't horse piss water.
This is horse Lemoose.
He died by drinking the water after getting hit by a horse and buggy by saving his son Asher.
I like how you, in this scenario you got hit by a horse and then as you're laying there you got out of a puddle.
He may have had two broken legs, but he was okay until he drank that water.
Yep. Josh Shoup liked his soup.
Brown drank some water, and made him poop.
Died of dysentery.
April? I think I probably would have died. Oh, I think I would have died from like eating the wrong berries. Like I would have gone foraging. Not that it was like, I would have gone foraging and picked the wrong ones and
bad
ended
mushrooms.
Up with, yeah.
Or like the right mushrooms.
Yeah. Right.
Oy. I get that. Lawrence.
Man, I had two thoughts here. Mm-hmm. One was probably alcoholism, but that's boring. Mm-hmm. The second is I'm going to use my imagination here. Say I went to brand a horse and I got kicked in the head.
I shouldn't laugh, but yes.
Yeah. No,
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like your wristwatch somehow.
Hey,
like
Steve, I'm going to brand a horse. Funk.
I think mine would be, I'd be probably at work and literally just not thinking and do almost similar to Josh, just walk in front of like a carriage and get trampled. I'm like, hey, Mrs.
Hey, pretty lady.
Yeah. Yep. Ah, that guy's dead.
Oh, man.
Oh, 1892.
Ryan died getting hit by a horse while he's outside a bar drunk and screaming, Lenny! Larry!
Yeah. I
don't brand that.
both of them died just the same
There's
day.
There's Josh licking a puddle. As April's with a handful of mushrooms going, huh?
That's probably bad.
All right. Well, we did a fun make believe and I enjoyed that. So,
oh boy.
Lizzie Andrew Borden.
I like that name.
Was born July 19th, 1860, which put her, I think, right in the, like a, that's a Civil War baby.
That's right.
happy birthday, Wheezy. But seriously, like, yeah, I don't know. Andrew and his wife were like, oh man, I hope this civil war ends soon. Whatever, squirt it in me.
Slavery really gets me off.
Oh God, that's dark. Fuck.
Runs in the family, apparently.
God, I just can't help but think about Ulysses S. Grant and Stonewall Jackson.
You know who's not running this family? Josh, he got ran over by a horse and broke both his legs.
Damn it, kid.
She was born in Fall River, Massachusetts, third biggest city in Massachusetts at the time.
Okay.
To Sarah Anthony Borden, whose surname was Morse, which that'll come up later, and Andrew Jackson Borden. Her father, who was of English and Welsh descent, grew up in very modest surroundings and struggled financially as a young man, despite being the descendant of wealthy and influential local residents. Hmm. Andrew eventually prospered in the manufacture and sale of furniture and caskets.
Ouch. Okay.
Well, I mean, well, during the Civil War, I get it.
Business was booming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He then became a successful property developer. It always ends up being property. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of pisses me off, because like all my friends who are like, yeah, life's been really good to me. And I'm like, what do you do again?
Real estate.
Yeah.
It's like watching those people buy the multi-million dollar houses. What do? I groom cats.
Yeah.
Right. And he works at Toys R Us. We can afford a $3 million home.
Mm-hmm. Newsflash, they can't. They're just pretending.
Mm-hmm. He was a director of several textile mills and owned considerable commercial property. He was also president of the Union Savings Bank and a director of the Durfee Safe Deposit.
Durfee.
Anyway, so, and Trust Co. At his death, his estate was valued at $300,000 in 1892.
Holy
that
moly.
Is equivalent to, I already got it, Josh.
No.
Don't worry. I Googled this.
Josh
went over my helmet?
I did. I didn't want you to have to bring your phone out and then make a weird fucking Amber Alert noise on your watch.
On your watch that interrupts the show.
Mm-hmm.
So think we're all going to die.
Equivalent to $9.6 million in 2022. Damn. Which, guys, it's the 130th year anniversary of
pesos.
This month.
Do you have that, Ryan?
The 130th what?
130th anniversary of this murder.
Wow.
Oh.
Hmm.
Whack. So, happy birthday to the murderers.
I guess.
Anyway. So, despite his wealth, Andrew was known for his frugality. So, he was a bit of a miser, was the term. Which is kind of the Ebenezer Scrooge. Well, I think a lot of it had to come from his upbringing. He didn't know like a rich, established life.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Borden home lacked indoor plumbing, although at the time it was a common accommodation for the wealthy. It was in an affluent area, but the wealthiest residents of Fall River, including Andrew's cousins, generally lived in the more fashionable neighborhood, quote, the Hill.
Oh.
So the Hills of Fall River, Massachusetts, 1892. Anyway,
what would that show be like? What would the women complain about?
Bad mushrooms.
terrible knitting.
Mm-hmm.
The scandalous playbill at the local
scurvy
theater.
Gas-powered vibrators.
You got to prime it first.
Little warm up.
Mm-hmm. Now,
Lizzie, farm hands.
Lizzie wasn't,
is it a two-stroke? I hope so.
Lizzie wasn't an only child, actually. Her older sister, Emma, Lenora Borden, had a relatively religious upbringing and attended Central Congregational Church. As a young woman, Lizzie was very involved in church activities, including teaching Sunday school to children of recent immigrants to the United States. She was involved in religious organizations such as the Christian Endeavor Society. My bad.
for which she served as secretary treasurer in contemporary social movements such as the Women's Christian Temperance Union. Now, I didn't know what a temperance union was, so I looked it up. The temperance movement was dedicated to promoting moderation and more often complete abstinence of the use of liquor. Hmm. So kind of like a teetotaler society in 1892. Mm-hmm. She was also a member of the Ladies Fruit and Flower Mission. 3 years after the death of Lizzie's mother, Sarah, Andrew married... Rest in peace, Sarah. Andrew married Abby Durfee Gray. I don't hear them pronouncing the middle name very much in the docs that I listen to about this. Now, granted, this most of this information comes from the wiki, but I did watch quite a few different documentaries. There is a startling amount of ASMR true crime videos of just white women, like literally with their scented candle, talking about this just case.
Whispering about true crime.
Their vagina candles.
Mm-hmm. And they...
And their moon charged rocks. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Rubbing a couple crystals together.
Fascinatingly enough, Glory. Some of their information was better than stuff I found in documentaries. So
believe
I'm like,
it.
These stay-at-home moms have some time on their hands.
Nothing better to do.
Anyway, Lizzie stated that she called her stepmother Miss Borden. So consider this. She was raised since five mm-hmm. by Abby. And never once called her mom. Mm. And I think that that's a bit of a through line in the family. Because you have Lizzie, you have her sister, and you have the dad. And at five, now granted the sister was 10 years older than her, so she's 15. Mm-hmm. But in many different detailed kind of articles and documentaries that I went through on this case, a lot of them say that her older sister was more of a surrogate mother than mm-hmm. Abby was. Mm-hmm. So she believed that Abby had married her father for wealth. And that's kind of the through line here.
I mean, it was the 1800s. Isn't that kind of how everyone was marrying? Was the, like,
well,
trade your daughter for like some goats? And...
Considering at 32 when the crimes happened, Lizzie was considered an old maid.
Yeah.
Like pastor, like literally 0.00001% chance she's ever going to get married. Like she'd be more, it'd be more realistic to think of her marrying a duck mm-hmm. than any... like physically upright male. Mm-hmm. So,
I have seen what a duck's dick can do.
They're squirrely. So anyway, so Abby had married her father because of wealth. Bridget Sullivan, whom they called Maggie, was the Borden's 25-year-old live-in maid who had immigrated to the U.S. from Ireland. She testified that Lizzie and Emma rarely ate meals with their parents. So again, Lizzie older and her older sister, Emma, were kind of like two peas in a pod. But I want to stress this. They called her Maggie after a previous Irish maid named Maggie and just refused to drop it. So her name was Bridget, but they're just like, yeah, whatever, you're Irish.
Maggie. Okay, Maggie, go clean the floor.
It's like, right,
you want me to fluff your pillow?
Basically. Or it was more like, go scrub the windows.
You want me?
We gotta get that Massachusetts. Actually, what is it? Massachusetts? Did I say Massachusetts here?
You're the one who read it.
Yes, I know. I just had to backpedal a second.
Yeah.
Okay, we gotta do the.
Hey, Rama. Yeah. I'm going to have you scrub my windows.
Just wanted to make sure we had the dialects right. Mm-hmm. So anyway. I want to paint a bit of a picture. I don't want to go completely off this because there's some things I think that you have to kind of explain. So, like I said, he's this miserly old guy. He owns this house that his two older daughters live in. Now, I didn't know this, but very early on, certain houses had this crazy accommodation called a hallway.
Ooh.
This house had no hallways. So in order to, and this is a three-story house, mm-hmm. in order to get to somebody else's room, you had to go through somebody else's room.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You're farting. You gotta go to the bathroom.
Oh, pause my Xbox. Oh.
I don't think they had Xboxes back then.
Cropped us through like four other people's rooms. Before you finally drop dry in the bathroom.
Era, I'm sorry. I had some bad milk. So.
And some of those Jim Morrison beans.
So, 3 years after the death of Lizzie's mother, Sarah, Andrew married Abby. Like I said, they move in. They live in this house. No hallways. In May of 1892, fast forwarding a little bit, Andrew killed multiple pigeons in his barn with a hatchet. Believing they were attracting local children to hunt them. So that was kind of a thing at the time. Like, mm-hmm. kids are bored as shit.
Right.
Again.
That just tells you how shitty pigeons are. It's like, oh, there's a guy coming with an axe. I guess I'll just...
Now, Lizzie had recently built a roost for the pigeons.
Mm.
So it has been commonly recounted that she was pretty upset about said, mm-hmm. you know, I named these pigeons, Dad.
Right.
I don't have a man. I have pigeons.
Dude, kids get mad over the dumbest shit. Asher today, literally today, made green water in the bathroom sink. Josh pulled the plug on it and it went down the drain. And Asher, it was like his pet died. And it was literally just water that he made green with markers.
Mm.
So like killing pigeons?
Yeah.
After you build a roost?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Mike Tyson would not be happy about that.
Now, there's some dispute as to how intense the fight was about the pigeons, but there was for sure a family argument in July of 1892 that prompted both sisters to take extended vacations. Now, Ooh. Keep in mind, Dad's super rich,
mm-hmm.
and they're cooped up in this house with their mom, who's not really a new mom. I would just call her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The sad thing is, in all reports that I read, Abby is basically talked about like she didn't even really exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she married this guy, so she's considered an old maid. And I would assume they made each other happy because he was giving, like, he was giving properties to her family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And that's part of where the argument comes from.
Mm. Okay.
Because they're like, Dad, we're your blood. Give us...
Mm-hmm.
It's like if... We'll say your kid goes off to school, comes back... You're an older gentleman and you decide to give all your cool gadgets that you have to your kids. Mm-hmm. Or you're a mom who wants to, like, you know, I have all these books I want to give to my kids. And you just randomly give it to the neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, kind of the way that the trial
sure
kind of discerns it. Like, a lot of it is them being like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're...
That was supposed to be for us.
Right. Now... I don't know about you, but I know me and Josh kind of have a similar thing when it comes to parents. And I don't necessarily feel like I'm owed anything from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of get that vibe from you too.
Yeah. I mean, my dad busted his ass for years working and now he's going out and he's traveling and I'm happy about that. Like, mm-hmm. if he spends it all, cool. Like, I'll make my own way.
Right.
I'm an adult.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's kind of like an older style thing. Almost like a kings and queens kind of like, I give you my kingdom.
You've mm-hmm. been bequeathed.
Right.
Or queethed.
But I also think that's like an older style of thinking. Like, mm-hmm. to me, you're not... What good is me giving things to my kids if they don't appreciate it?
Right.
Exactly.
And so if there's somebody who would appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like say a musician who would, mm-hmm. who would enjoy having my
They certainly don't have money.
Well, I know. the difference between them and a, yeah. and a, and a, what is it?
A 12 inch pizza.
Yeah.
12 inch pizza can feed a family of four.
Well, and I think too, you know, because the sisters were both single.
Yes.
So, I mean, that was the 1800s. They didn't really, like, women were not owning land.
You couldn't, I don't think, back legally. Then,
right. So, you know, I think that's part of it anything. Too. Is like, well, you're not married, so.
So the only thing this. That they have is what their father is going to give to them mm-hmm. when he dies.
Right.
Which feels inevitable. Like 60 is like 2000 in yeah. this era. So anyway.
That old to me.
Hey. Keep on your sparkling waters and your vitamins, folks. Right. So, like I said, they had a big fight. It was prompted and the sisters leave to go on a vacation, and which I think was a good idea. Mm-hmm. Personally, I don't know what the fight is about and no one does.
What's an extended vacation?
That's what I would like
you'll
to
figure know. Out in about
a month,
30 years.
Yeah.
When you're retired.
Yeah. So is that like a, you leave and you don't necessarily have a, I'm coming back in 2 weeks. Like you leave for like 6 months or
no. So, this was in July. The murders happened August 4th. So maybe a week. A vacation could be a weekend. Yeah. So say they're going away for a weekend and it's fucking Wednesday. They have a fight and they're like, fuck it, dad. We're leaving now.
Going to the Holiday Inn.
We're old maids. See?
Continental breakfast.
Ah, we're from Massachusetts.
From the 40s?
Yeah, that's, we're a little confused where we're from. Yeah. But anyway, so they go, this extended vacation was in New Bedford. They returned to Fall River a week before the murders. Give you kind of a place where they were. Mm-hmm. Lizzie chose to stay in a local rooming house for 4 days before returning to the family residence. So there's like that I think would mean the extended vacation. So mm-hmm. she's like, fuck this. Dad doesn't have electricity. Doesn't have a fucking bathtub for me to soak my toes in.
Doesn't have any hallways.
For my yearly bath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you treat know? Yourself, girl.
I like to sit in my bathtub and eat cheese. What's wrong with right. that?
Doesn't.
But it should be noted that because of Andrew's generally miserly ways, they weren't used to the rich people's life and getting a chance away and them having to return to the subpar no hallway house in the workers' district. Housing wasn't ideal. So that's part of why they extended that. So tension had been growing within the Borden family in the months before the murders, especially over Andrew's gifts of real estate to various branches of Abby's family. Abby. Yeah. You're not mom. After their stepmother's sister received a house, the sisters demanded and received a rental property, the home they had lived in until their mother died. So they were little babbies. Five, three, something like that. Who cares? Which they purchased from their father for one. Delaro. A few weeks before the murders, they sold the property back to their house for $5,000. Keep that upstairs, Josh. Okay. You know, we do a verdict on this show. Which, by the way, $5,000 is equivalent to $151,000. Today's money. The night before the murders, John Vinicum Morse was the surname mm-hmm. of the mom, Sarah. The brother of Lizzie and Emma's deceased mother visited and was invited to stay for a few days to discuss business matters with his brother-in-law, Andrew. Hmm. Some writers have speculated that their conversation particularly about property transfer may have aggravated an already tense situation. So it's very, it's pretty well speculated, especially in media and all that, that these two got along, but it was tense. Mm-hmm. So, for several days before the murders, the entire household became violently ill. A family friend later speculated that mutton left on the stove to use in meals over several days was the cause. But Abby had feared poison, given that Andrew had not been a popular man, and actually they had a break-in during this time.
Oh.
And Andrew had sought to it that Maggie, the maid, had changed the locks. So something to keep in the back of your mind. Now, getting to the murders before we take a break. John Morse, like I said, Vinicum was his middle name, arrived in the evening of August 3rd.
Oh, the day before?
August 3rd being the day before, but also my birthday. That's just saying. Next week when this episode comes out, I'll be 40. Four decades of tomfoolery and wishing I was Batman. Anyway, he slept
goodbye
in the
30s. Hello, knee pain.
I know.
Let me tell you what you're in store for, Ryan.
As I drink this sparkling water.
Popping Doritos in your mouth.
What kind of food you like? Because just throw them away.
Skittles.
Nope. No more.
Now it's pain meds.
Mm-hmm. So he arrives August 3rd and slept in the guest room, which was also just...
And lots of gas.
It was comfy.
But also, Larry feels very comfy now.
Now I do.
I want to paint this too because
I just painted this.
I painted my cabinet door.
So when you go upstairs, you walk into Lizzie's room, which is the biggest room on that floor. You have to go to the right to get to her sister's room, which is this smaller room, the older sister. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the left, that's Andrew and Abby's room. So like, kind of crazy, huh? Mm-hmm. Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Lizzie, big room. Maid, or sorry, not maid, sister and dad parents. And mom, which is kind of crazy because it's like, can you imagine having to have your kids walk through your room every day?
Just
they
to do get already.
To the- I mean, yeah, that would be weird.
But they have to. Mm-hmm. It's not just like a... It's like when you go to a friend's house and pass out on the couch and immediately you have to get up as soon as the cats come out to eat or the dog decides to fuck your hand because you're asleep or passed out. I don't know. I've never been there.
I was wondering why Lando loved you so much.
The wrist!
So those late night trysts after you've passed out on our couch. And oh, it's all coming together now, man.
Anyway, so after breakfast the next morning, at which Andrew, Abby, Lizzie, John, and the Borden's maid Bridget were present, Andrew and John went to the sitting room, which would have been where you would play PlayStation, I guess, where they chatted for nearly an hour. John Morse, that's the uncle slash brother-in-law, left around 8:48 a.m. to buy a pair of oxen and visit his niece in Fall River, planning to return to the Borden home for lunch at noon. Andrew, the dad, left for his morning walk sometime after 9 a.m. Now keep this in mind.
Okay.
Nefarious things are happening this morning. Although the cleaning of the guest room was one of Lizzie and Emma's regular chores, Abby went upstairs sometime between 9 and 10:30. This is the stepmom. Mm-hmm. To make the bed. According to the forensic investigation, Abby was facing her killer at the time of the attack. She was first struck on the side of her head with a hatchet, which cut her just above the ear, causing her to turn and fall face down on the floor, creating contusions on her nose and forehead. Her killer then struck her multiple times, delivering 17 more direct hits to the back of her head. My God, man!
That was the sound of her brains.
The ship has left the harbor.
All right. So as we stand right now, it's the morning of August 4th. Abby's dead, 1892. When Andrew returned at around 10:30 a.m., his key failed to open the door. So he knocked. Sullivan went to unlock the door, finding it jammed. That's Maggie, the maid. Mm-hmm. Because actually, technically, he went to the side door. He always went through the side door to get to the house. But Maggie heard him being like, "Brr, what's going on here? Oh, I almost dropped my top hat and my monocle." and went to the front. Door still locked. Maggie comes on, unlocks it. But she uttered a curse.
Fuck.
At the time, no, it wasn't fuck. It was pshaw. Because she's Irish, I guess. I don't know.
I thought it was like a...
Yep.
I thought there was some late 80s version of like, was it TLC or...
What?
That push it? Like push out.
So Sullivan went to unlock the door, finding it jammed. She uttered a curse, pshaw, an old-timey curse of 1892. She would later testify, pay attention, later that she had heard at that moment when she said the curse, she heard Lizzie Borden laughing immediately after. She did not see Lizzie, but stated that the laughter was coming from the top of the stairs. Hmm. Now remember, you have to get
her bedroom.
There's no hallways.
Right.
Holy cow, I got a chill. I was a little creeped out for a second. Especially because this room is haunted currently. Yeah. We've got like a strobe light going on behind April's head.
It's Maria Menounos.
Spirit of Maria Menounos flickering our light. Uh-oh.
Knock it off, Lizzie! So, this was considered significant as Abby was already dead at the time.
Oh.
Keep that in your back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, her body would have been visible to anyone on the home's second floor. Lizzie later denied being upstairs and testified that her father had asked her where Abby was, to which she replied that a messenger had delivered Abby a note to visit a sick friend.
Hmm.
That's her story.
Okay.
That's Lizzie's story. Miss Tee-hee-hee on the stairs. Lizzie stated that she had then removed Andrew's boots and helped him into slippers before he lay down on the sofa for a nap. This was a detail contradicted by the crime scene photos, which show Andrew wearing boots.
Hmm.
She then informed Sullivan, the maid, of a department store sale and offered her permission to attend, but Sullivan felt unwell, maybe still the food poisoning, mm-hmm. I don't know, and went to take a nap in her bedroom instead. Sullivan testified that she was in her third floor room, resting from cleaning windows, which Lizzie had told her to do.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this was a hot day, 90 degrees.
Ooh.
She's out there, hey, today, today, today. Scrubbing windows. And Lizzie's like, oh boy, I'm just gonna pick pears and be a old maid.
You want me to fluff your pillow?
I mean, she doesn't have much to do because a lot of the accounts say that she was just kind of like ironing napkins, or, well, I say napkins, but they call it handkerchiefs.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I gotta blow my nose in something that isn't fucking look like Josh's shirt.
Right.
So,
oh man.
We love you, anyways. But as you said, she heard the town clock go off at 11 a.m., making its like ding dongy ding.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly around 10 a.m., she heard Lizzie call from downstairs, Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Someone came in and killed him. Unquote.
Hmm.
Andrew was slumped on a couch in the downstairs sitting room, struck 10 or 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon. Holy
wow.
God.
Excuse me.
Somebody's sick in here, too. One of his eyes, now this is scary to me, one of his eyes had been split clearly in two.
Ew, so,
I don't know if you hate eyeball horror or if you're into it like Josh is with the boner over here that's poking through his shirt, but... One of his eyes had been split cleanly in two, suggesting that he had been asleep when attacked. So his eyes shut.
Mm-hmm.
My God, like a split grape.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so his still bleeding wound suggested a very recent attack because people were there within 30 minutes.
Mm.
They got nothing better to do.
Right.
It's 11.
They ordered a pizza.
11:10 a.m.
Right.
It's fucking searing hot.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has AC. So what you got? Your maid just fanning the door in front of the house. You're like, keep it going, Maggie. So Dr. Bowen, who is a suspect, by the way,
mm-hmm.
throw that in your back pocket. The family's physician arrived from his home across the street and pronounced both victims dead. After she told the maid to go get him, and then he came there pretty quick. Detectives estimated that Andrew's death had occurred at approximately 11 a.m. Now, I have something to say here.
Okay.
To keep in mind. On August 4th, 1892, there was a policeman's carnival happening. I'm not even joking. I don't know what you do at a policeman's carnival.
Eat donuts.
Don't say it, Larry.
I think you and I were both on the same wavelength.
But literally, it was a fair for the local policemen to go to. And they had policeman activities like rate your mustache, twirl your gun,
shoot the black slaves.
We talk right over each other. I don't know if you hear that jokes.
But meanwhile...
Maybe that's better. Maybe yeah, that's probably maybe for, that's the, for best. The best. Yes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have...
You're the, horrible.
You have the B...
You're horrible.
You have the B team running the cop outpost.
It's like Police Academy 5.
So you got Two-Tooth Tommy, the slow guy from the neighborhood, and whoever's in the drunk take being the deputies at the time to go show up to this crime scene. Anyway, so needless to say, this take that as we go into the second segment, but it's time for us to take a break. When we come back, the investigation, the trial, and the verdict.
It became the crime of the century, the 19th century, with the victim's daughter the main suspect. But where was the evidence?
I would think that there would definitely be blood on her.
But there wasn't. Police found only a tiny speck of blood on one of Lizzie's undergarments. But in the basement, a pail of bloody cloths. Her explanation? She was menstruating.
And the police took it no further.
In 1893, a jury of 12 men just couldn't believe a woman could commit such an act.
Fucking-tastic, cat.
It was the pussy!
Don't worry, the dog's got it.
Great.
Anyway.
Dog's gonna have cat food farts all night.
It's fine. He stole a whole breadstick off the table today, so it's...
As I had my back turned and I was telling her how he was such a good boy.
Mm-hmm. Not such a good boy.
Lizzie Borden's initial answers to the police officer's questions were at times strange and contradictory. Two-Tooth Tommy didn't ask the right questions. Ah, they're busy. They're busy at the cops carnival. But they got us, the B team. Oops, we just walked through a big stage of evidence. What are blood spurts? I don't know. Should we put one of those ropes around the scene? Nah. Because at the time, literally, when there was a crime, there was no cordoning off or like making sure people didn't walk through the scene. There was also this idea of like people's personal space. You don't go in someone's room.
Right.
You don't ruffle through their papers, check their phone. You don't do what they call the Patriot Act and spy on your people.
It's the 1890s iPhones.
Had a cranky wheel on it.
Gas powered.
Yep.
So anyway,
coal powered.
Initially, she reported hearing a groan or a scraping noise or a distress call before entering the house. She's like just holding a pear. Like, what is a pear? She also had a fishing trip in 4 days. Hmm. So supposedly she'd went out to the shed to look at lures.
Yeah.
Which is what you do. Mm-hmm. You're bored. Inspect your lures. Shit. 2 hours later, she told police she had heard nothing and entered the house not realizing that anything was wrong. When asked where her stepmother was, she recounted Abby receiving a note asking her to visit a sick friend. She also stated that she thought Abby had returned and asked if someone could go upstairs and look for her.
Hmm.
Sullivan and a neighbor, Mrs. Churchill, were halfway up the stairs, their eyes level with the floor when they looked into the guest room and saw Abby lying face down on the floor.
Hmm.
Now, according to what we know as fact, we know two people died, mm-hmm. and two people died by axe wounds in a house in this time period on this said day. That's what we know as fact. So everything that people say could be a lie,
mm-hmm.
or it could be gray because they don't understand, because people in trauma generally don't remember things
mm-hmm.
to the full extent. But according to what they were able to deduce, Abby died first. Mm-hmm. So try to keep that in mind when you think about these two bodies in this house.
Now, I do have a question, and I don't know if you can answer this,
mm-hmm.
but it's something that I kind of get stuck on. Now, you said when the dad was murdered, the maid was on the third floor?
Supposedly taking a nap. There's this now, whole pre-lunch nap thing that can we bring this back?
I agree. Now, the way that the house was set up, would she have had to pass through Lizzie's room on the second floor?
I think
to get to the first
she
floor?
She would at least see it. But if the door's shut, then okay. No. So there's that.
Because that's my thought. Is like, okay, if the stairs go directly into Lizzie's room where the mom was dead and the maid had to come down from the third floor, did she just not?
Well, that's the other thing is her body was not immediately visible.
Oh, okay.
Like it was slumped behind the bed
mm-hmm.
per se. But also I want, and I'm going to reiterate this because this will play into the verdict as well. The front and the side doors were locked when Abby would have been dead and Andrew tried to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just want to reiterate that. So police did search her room, but it was a cursory inspection. Despite her attitude and changing alibis, nobody bothered to check her for bloodstains. Lizzie. And again, as Josh's clip pointed out, she was at the time menstruating.
Hmm.
Now, one of the key things, and I guess this will probably come up, so I don't necessarily need to bring this up, but I'm going to do it anyways because it's fascinating to me. During this time in this era, this was a clear sign of somebody going crazy at the time was that they were menstruating.
That's how it works, right?
Yeah, of course.
Get chocolate and flowers on the way home, you goof.
Yep.
Somebody's having a rough day.
Mm-hmm.
So
heavy flow day.
At the trial, the police admitted to not have done a proper search because Borden was not feeling well. Hence the menses.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe that's the slang term for that. They were subsequently criticized for their lack of diligence. Again, B squad.
Mm-hmm.
In the basement, police found two hatchets, two axes,
whoops,
and a hatchet head with a broken handle.
Hmm.
The hatchet head was suspected of being the murder weapon as the break in the handle appeared fresh and the ash and dust on the head, unlike that on the other bladed tools, appeared to have been deliberately applied to make it look as if it had been in the basement for some time.
Hmm.
However, none of these tools were removed from the house. Because of the mysterious illness that I mentioned that had stricken the household before the murders, the family's milk and Andrew's and Abby's stomachs removed during autopsies performed in the Borden dining room were tested for poison, but none was found.
Hmm.
Residents suspected Lizzie of purchasing hydrocyanic acid in a diluted form from the local drugstore. She defended that she inquired about the acid so she could clean her furs. Despite the local medical examiner's testimony that it did not have antiseptic properties.
Hmm.
Lizzie and Emma's friend, Alice Russell, decided to stay with them the night following the murders while Morris spent the night in the attic guest room. Police were stationed around the house on the night of August 4th, during which an officer said he had seen Borden enter the cellar with Russell carrying a kerosene lamp and a slop pail. He stated he saw both women exit the cellar, after which Borden returned alone, though he was unable to see what she was doing. He stated it appears she was bent over the sink.
Hmm.
On August 5th, John Morris left the house.
Bent over the uncle.
And was mobbed by hundreds of people. Now, keep in mind, at the time, this was huge news. There were like 2,000 people. I mean, and at the time, we don't have TMZ, but
they
like,
got nothing to do.
They have nothing to do. It's hot. It's Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. There's no baseball.
Yeah.
Okay. There's baseball, but they're confused about what baseball is.
Yeah.
What is this ball of base? And what are these mats in home and place and outfield? On August 6th, police conducted a more thorough search of the house. So, 2 whole days. They're like, hey guys, this carnival's been going a while. James has been spinning his gun for a long time. There's like 2,000 people out there. We might need to do some police work.
Finally ran out of black guys to shoot.
Oh no.
No.
No. It's not that bad, but yeah. All right, so that evening, a police officer and the mayor visited the Bordens because at this point, people are like, bzz, 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 we got nothing.
They're using the vibrators?
No, they're buzzing with the news. Yeah, they're all fingering themselves, Josh, you know, because... and Lizzie was informed that she was a suspect in the murders. The next morning, after the 6th, so I would assume the 7th, Russell entered the kitchen to find Borden tearing up a dress. She explained that she was planning to put it on the fire because it was covered in paint. It was never determined whether it was the dress she'd been wearing the day of the murders. Mm-hmm. Now, skipping to the trial. Borden's trial took place in New Bedford, starting on June 5th, 1893. So like a whole year almost forward. Prosecuting attorneys were Hosea M. Knowlton and future U.S. Supreme Court Justice William H. Moody, who, according to what I read, he had at the time the hairdress of two big curls and a narrator's mouth, which I was like, what?
What does that even mean?
Right?
He had a mouth that told stories, maybe?
You could put a lot of dicks in there, I guess.
I mean, hey.
I have a narrator's mouth.
It's so warm in here.
I have giant balls.
Man, Larry just went through puberty there.
The fourth one just dropped.
Holy shit. So, defending were Andrew V. Jennings, Melvin O. Adams, and former Massachusetts Governor George D. Robinson. So, at the time, according to everything I read, this was like the dream team, like the OJ Johnny Cochran team for the rich. And it cost $1 million of her family's money.
If the axe don't split, you must have quit.
5 days before the trial's commencement, on June 1st, another axe murder occurred in Fall River. This time, the victim was Bertha Manchester. I cannot believe that is not a typo. That is a real fucking name.
Bertha?
Yep. Yeah.
Bertha Manchester.
Mm-hmm. I know, the last name's actually weirder than the first name.
I mean, if you got an idea... for a name for your pet lizard, mm-hmm. you really have the name.
That's my wife.
Bertha was found hacked to death in the kitchen. The similarities between the Manchester and Borden's murder were striking and noted by jurors. However, Jose Correa de Mello, a Portuguese immigrant, was later convicted of Manchester's murder in 1894 and was determined not to have been in the vicinity of Fall River at the time of the Borden murders because their first suspect before anybody was a Portuguese person because they just thought, he's strange, he's an immigrant, we don't like him.
Browner than a paper bag. He's probably guilty.
He could hide the blood stains with his skin.
Portuguese magic.
Right. So a prominent point of discussion in the trial, or from the newspapers talk about it, was the hatchet head found in the basement, which was not convincingly demonstrated by the prosecution to be the murder weapon. Prosecutors argued that the killer had removed the handle because it would have been covered in blood. One officer testified that a hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, but another officer contradicted this. Though no bloody clothing was found at the scene, Russell testified that on August 8th, 1892, she had witnessed Borden burn a dress in the kitchen stove, saying it had been ruined when she brushed against wet paint. During the course of the trial, defense never attempted to challenge that statement. Lizzie Borden's presence at the home was also a point of dispute during the trial. According to testimony, Sullivan entered the second floor, this is the maid, of the home at around 10:58 a.m. and left Lizzie and her father downstairs. Lizzie told several people that at this time she went into the barn. It was not in the house. Like I said, fishing lures for 20 minutes or possibly a half hour. Hyman Lubinsky testified for the defense that he saw Lizzie Borden leaving the barn at 11:03 a.m. and Charles Gardner confirmed the time. At 11:10 a.m., Lizzie called Sullivan downstairs. That's when she's like, Dad's dead. And told her Andrew had been murdered and ordered her not to enter the room. Instead, Borden sent her to get the doctor. Interesting. I didn't know that. Both victims' heads had been removed during autopsy and the skulls were admitted as evidence. So people had to look at this thing during the trial. Upon seeing them in the courtroom, Borden fainted. Lizzie, took a tumble. Evidence was excluded that Borden had sought to purchase prussic acid or hydrogen cyanide, purportedly for cleaning a sealskin cloak from a local druggist on the day before the murders. The judge ruled that the incident was too remote in time to have any connection. This is 1892. Just remind yourself, in case you've lost all faith in legal things, you might also be watching the news. But anyway... Yeah. The presiding Associate Justice Justin Dewey, who had been appointed by Robinson when he was governor, delivered a lengthy summary that supported the defense as his charge to the jury before it was sent to deliberate on June 20th, 1893. After an hour and a half of deliberation, the jury acquitted Borden of the murder. She was found not guilty. Upon exiting the courthouse, she told reporters she was, quote, the happiest woman in the world.
An odd sentiment.
Especially after your parents die.
Yeah.
The trial had been compared to the later trials of Bruno Hauptmann, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, and O.J. Simpson as a landmark in publicity and public interest in the history of American legal proceedings. Now, here's a bit of speculation. Although acquitted at trial, Borden remains the prime suspect in her father and stepmother's murders. And in fact, in Bill James' book, Popular Crime, he submits that she is the least likely suspect and the most probable suspect. So it's this crazy thing where it's like, because evidence and police proceedings were so kind of archaic even then, even though it's kind of close to evolving and changing in the 20th century, it was still just... It's like the Jack the Ripper murders. You know the crimes happened and there's photographic evidence, but
You have to go based on testimony. Now, I will say, Dr. Lowen, the doctor that came there, during much of Lizzie Borden's testimony, because of her hysterics and also being known to be like a very gentle old maid, she did receive or get administered some sort of narcotic mm-hmm. to calm her down, but also something to stimulate her. So given our idea of what drugs really do to you and what they can kind of inform, especially mm-hmm. during somebody's testimony,
sure.
that I can kind of get away from speculating too much on her original testimony and there mm-hmm. being holes in that, especially being that she was a kindly lady by all accounts mm-hmm. and having gone through this. Go ahead, Josh.
Well, and yeah, I mean, just to add to her character, I mean, I'd read that she was, I mean, you had mentioned she worked in the church, but like also she was like doing Thanksgiving meals for people for like that don't, you know, like the homeless or whatever. And from all that I had read, a absolute stand-up person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, by all intents and purposes, her whole family was pretty decent. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because your dad's a miser and likes to pinch pennies doesn't necessarily mean that the family's bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She just, it They're stood just out with her their... being very friendly with everybody and just,
right.
as it would, it'd be no different than, I don't want to say you don't go to church, dear.
That doesn't mean anything.
But yeah, just, and that's why it is crazy to hear all this. And I know that'll probably come up again in the verdict, but I just wanted to throw that out there as something mm-hmm. I read.
Now, writer Victoria Lincoln proposed in 1967 that Borden might have committed the murders while in a fugue state. Another prominent suggestion was that she was physically and sexually abused by her father, which will come up a lot if you, you go down the conspiracy hole on this mm-hmm. one, which drove her to kill him. There is little evidence to support this, but incest is not a topic that would have been discussed at the time, and the methods for collecting physical evidence would have been quite different in 1892. This belief was intimated in local papers at the time of the murders and was revisited by scholar Marcia Carlyle in a 1992 essay. Mystery author Ed McBain, in his 1984 novel Lizzie, suggested that Borden committed the murders after being caught in a tryst with Maggie Sullivan, the maid. McBain elaborated on his speculation in a 1999 interview, speculating that Abby had caught, that's the stepmom, had caught Lizzie and Sullivan together, stepmom, and was so disgusted, and that Lizzie had killed Abby with a candlestick. When Andrew returned, she had confessed to him, but killed him in a rage with a hatchet when he reacted exactly as Abby had. McBaines further speculates that Sullivan disposed of the hatchet somewhere afterwards. In her later years, Borden was rumored to be gay, but there was no such speculation about Sullivan, who found other employment after the murders and later married a man she met while working as a maid in Butte, Montana.
Hmm.
She died in Butte in 1948, where she allegedly gave a deathbed confession to her sister, stating that she had changed her testimony on the stand in order to protect Borden.
Mm-hmm.
Another significant suspect is John Morse, the brother-in-law, who he had rarely met with the family after his sister died, but had slept in the house the night before the murders. According to law enforcement, Morse had provided an absurdly perfect and over-detailed alibi for the death of Abby Borden. He was considered a suspect by police for a period. Others noted as potential suspects in the crimes include Sullivan, possibly in retaliation for being ordered to clean the windows on a hot day, the day of the murders. It was, like I said, in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, she was still recovering from the mystery illness that had struck the household. Also, by the way, remember, she was being called the wrong name all the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe that started to rack up. Who knows?
Well, she was an immigrant, too, so you have to wonder if they treated her poorly.
Sure, they did.
A man named William Borden, suspected to be Andrew's illegitimate son, was noted as a possible suspect by writer Arnold Brown, who surmised in his book, Lizzie Borden, The Legend, The Truth, The Final Chapter, that William had tried and failed to extort money from his father. However, author Leonard Ribello did extensive research on William Borden in Brown's book and was able to prove he was not Andrew Borden's son.
Hmm.
Although Emma had an alibi at Fairhaven, which is 15 miles away, crime writer Frank Spearing proposed in his 1984 book, Lizzie, that she might have secretly visited the residence to kill her parents before returning to Fairhaven to receive the telegram informing her of the murders. After the trial, the Borden sisters moved into a large modern house in the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally got from their workers' residence.
Moving on up.
And went to that place that they had idolized. Around the time, Lizzie began using the name Elizabeth A. Borden at their new house, which Elizabeth dubbed Maplecroft. They had a staff that included live-in maids, a housekeeper, and a coachman. Coachman. That's crazy. Because Abby was ruled to... Larry? You doing
anything
right?
You want
to
add, Larry?
I think I've said enough.
Larry needs a coachman to get home. So, because Abby was ruled to have died before Andrew, her estate went first to Andrew and then, at his death, passed to his daughters as part of his own estate.
That was quick.
Which is interesting to consider. Mm-hmm. And these are smart people. A considerable settlement, however, was paid to settle claims by Abby's family. Despite the acquittal, Borden was ostracized by the Fall River Society. Her name was again brought into the public eye when she was accused of shoplifting in 1897 in Providence, Rhode Island. In 1905, shortly after an argument over a party that Elizabeth had given for actress Nancy O'Neill, Emma moved out of the house and they never talked again.
Mm.
Borden was ill in her last year following the removal of her gallbladder. She died of pneumonia on June 1st, 1927 in Fall River. Funeral details were not published and few attended. 9 days later, just 9 days later, Emma died from chronic nephritis at the age of 76, which would put her at 76, Emma, and her sister, Lizzie, 66. Emma died in a nursing home in New Market, New Hampshire, having moved to this location in 1923, both for health reasons and to avoid renewed attention following the publication in the 20s of another book about the murders. The sisters, neither of whom had ever married, were buried side by side in the family plot in Oak Grove Cemetery.
Hmm.
At the time of her death, Borden was worth over $250,000, equivalent to $5.2 million.
Wow.
Current. She owned a house on the corner of French Street and Belmont Street, several office buildings, shares in several utilities, two cars, and a large amount of jewelry. She left $30,000, the equivalent of $600,000, to the Fall River Animal Rescue League, and $500 in trust for perpetual care of her father's grave.
Interesting.
Which would equal $10,000. So the $500 is $10,000. Her closest friend and cousin each received her closest friend and a cousin each received $6,000, which is $126,000 today, substantial sums to be distributed in 1927, and numerous friends and family members each received roughly what equates to $21,000 each.
Wow.
Some even up to $105,000.
Ooh,
which was 5,000.
Interesting. So,
and that's it.
My question before we go to the verdict is, after the murders and after the trial, do we know that she led a life that was the same as before the murders? Like, was she still considered like a good person?
Well, I think when you heard the animal donation, you probably thought that like, she was a good person.
Right.
I think there's a lot of speculation about sociopaths and whether or not they have human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that leads into my verdict, but for the most part. What I told you was what was reported on. And every time a book came out, there was new speculation. She was a private person. She was basically the same person she was before. She just lived in a nicer house. She had maybe 26, so she's 32. So it's about another lifetime where it was all quiet after the trial.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But a good 30 years of existence where she was acquitted and was able to live with her sister. But then again, they had a falling out.
Yeah.
So the drama was reported on. There was, you know,
I guess she was
estranged by a lot of people too, though.
I guess I was just looking at, like, was she like a big active member in her church still and
probably
teaching kids and
probably not, or else it would have came up.
Sure.
A lot of what comes up is that she couldn't.
I get that.
Cohabitate in those social circles anymore because a lot of people thought she was guilty.
Right. Hmm. And then my other question is, did they ever say what she was supposedly painting that was red?
It wasn't red.
Oh, I thought you said that.
It was green. The thing that she was painting the day.
Right.
And somebody testified at some point that, or at least it was rumored that they brought up it was green. Larry's pants are green. God.
That's brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was... Wow. That had a punch to it. I actually felt the shockwave on my leg. So,
oh my God.
So she was painting something that was green, actually, at the time. And, yeah. I mean, everything has been as sussed over as it could be. There's no video cameras, you know, there's nothing. They lived in a house by candlelight, and Andrew, the dad, he was so, like, again, miserly when it came to using even candlelight. Like, he would have him put the lights out, and he would try to just sit in the dark and read or whatever. He's like, turn the candle off. But anyway, let's get to the verdict. One corner, full podcasters. You know, and loving, yeah. Feeling it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And loving you, and always will be true. Getting to the bottom of this. The other corner, Lizzie Borden. And we'll say, we're going to suss this out. We have to determine who did it. How did it happen? Anything. What do we think happened? How did Andrew and Abby Borden die? And I am going to go to my main beard to the left of me, looking suave, very impressive.
This is a tough one. Because I think we all want to say Lizzie. Everything points to her. But at the same time, there is a small part of me that thinks it was maybe the Monica or whatever her name was. Molly or...
Maggie.
There is a small
AKA
part of me...
AKA Bridget. Her real name was Bridget.
I kind of feel like it could be her. Because, I mean, her alibi...
She's the one that unlocked the door.
Exactly. It's just as plausible. Because what if she did, Lizzie went out and was checking her lures, and that was all the time that Maggie needed to go downstairs.
And they got in a couple's argument. She's like, wash the windows, bitch. And she's like, fine, I'll scrub these fucking windows. You better lick my pussy later. And then she saw the dad and she was like, give me some fucking money, you piece of shit. Stop calling me Maggie.
Yeah, that's why I feel like it's... I could see it being her. So I really don't have
a
verdict
a movie
because
about it.
I could see it being both.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't lean one way or the other more heavily.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think for me, I think Lizzie had involvement of some kind because with her testimony and all the interviews that she did being so... like patchy and all over the place and like the burning of the dress and like the shoes were different. And like, there's so much stuff that doesn't add up. that I think a lot of this would have been a lot clearer had it not been fucking Crockett and Tubbs trying to do this investigation. Like, yeah, you know, I think if they would have gotten better police work initially, and like, because didn't you say she had the maid call the doctor first?
She wouldn't let her go see the body first. She had her go see the doctor first.
Like, I don't know.
Doctor. Dad's dead.
Right. A lot of it doesn't make sense to me. And
imagine what they really said.
Right. So I think it was either Lizzie herself or Lizzie and the maid. Because, like, fuck, man, you're going to call me the wrong name just to be a dick about it? Like, that would piss me off,
especially if they were a couple.
Right. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
But yeah, I don't think she's totally innocent.
Mm. Lawrence?
I don't think the maid did it. Just because someone's mean to you doesn't mean you murder
them.
That's
true.
I agree with April with the whole... feels like lying the whole throughout the whole trial and everything. Just... And isn't it usually like a relative that kills someone?
It's like 90% yeah. chance.
I'm gonna play the odds on that one and say it was Lizzie.
Well, and like the fact that she like said, "Well, I say it's all this blood because of my period." Look, when I was in middle school,
oh boy.
I got out of being in gym class for like 4 solid months because every time we had to dress out, I told my gym teacher, who was a man, that I had my period. And he was like, oh, he was so flustered by the fact that I was bleeding out of my vagina that he was like, oh, that's fine. You don't have to do gym today.
And that's what, 1997?
Yeah.
Not 1892. Like
early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, that's like a whole 100 years later.
Yeah.
You know, I think maybe use that a little bit too.
Yeah, hey girls, to like
fluster.
Pro tip.
Yeah, right? You really fluster a man if you tell him you're on your period. Or excite him. I don't know what they're into.
Ugh. All right.
Jesus, knocked yourself out with the microphone.
It could be the fumes in this room. I
don't know what you're talking about.
I have thought about this a few times, and I was excited. This was one that I wanted to cover. So I have a feeling that in this case, a lot of what you hear isn't what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And...
yeah, because a lot of it's like speculation 100 years
right.
later.
It's like, right. It's and it's also what kind of disconnects me, but also entices me to the case,
mm-hmm.
much like the Jack the Ripper case and also the Lindbergh baby case.
Are they writing books to make money? Or are they writing books to uncover a crime?
Right. Right. I think with this, it's highly likely that Lizzie was involved.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, even though I like the idea of a technical old maid just being a good person and being at the wrong place at the wrong time and being able to live out her life. But when you look at the hard facts and the true crime history that we've all sussed through at this point, especially if you're listening to this episode, you probably know more than me. You've been yelling at your fucking phone the whole time. I apologize, but guess what? Like you, we probably both think that Lizzie did it. And I think in this case, it had something to do with Lizzie and probably on the side had something to do with the maid. And that's my verdict.
I would feel differently about it if they didn't have such a disconnected relationship with their parents. Like, I think that probably made it a lot easier for her, the fact that they spent no time.
Mm.
The only
and
thing
had
that,
no kind of loving relationship.
The only thing that throws me off about the maid was if she was her lover, why would she say she was laughing upstairs?
Right. Yeah, because that immediately places her in the wrong place.
In the center.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a bad week for them.
Yeah.
On top of having the stomach grumbles and mm-hmm. being bedridden.
Well, and to that point too, do you think that was an attempted murder? Like if she
maybe
had
she tried to throw her under the bus, right. Even though at the time they had this plan worked out where they were going to take them down. And
right. Well, if she's like, oh, I'm buying this acid. It was cyanide. Slip it in the maid, slipping it into whatever they're giving the family. And
that's
like,
for my cloak.
That wasn't enough. Which, and it all just gave them the poops instead of killing them.
Fuck. We attempted that robbery last month and that got botched. We had to get new locks and fuck, I can't even find a key maker in this stupid town.
They're all the fucking policeman circus.
twirling their batons. Hey, Mark, you think if I drink 6 beers, my wife will love me again? No, Steve. No. Fun fact about the time. You were supposed to have formal dresses that dictated either A, the time of the year, and B, if you were a widow or not.
Oh.
So for an entire year, you had to wear black and mourning, which is
metal.
What they wore then, which was goth before goth, Larry. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's been your episode. Check us out on the TikToks, on the Beat Bops, on the Woo Wops, on the Spotify, on the Tidal, on your Apple, on your Android. Give us 5 stars. All the stars. What else do we got going on, folks? Things? We doing anything?
No.
Yeah. Oh, kind of boring right now.
Maybe wrap the show up. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, does anybody have anything they like to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
Is it when they have a giant dick but come in 3 seconds? Yep.
That's when we do ass to mouth. I am the ass admiral. I don't remember saying this.
In the anus.
Ass admiral? There's a through line with you, Josh.
I don't remember saying that. I am the ass admiral.
Wow.
I'm just going to get him one of those like sea captain hats.
It's got a little butt on the top with like a feather coming out of the crack. All right. Well, hey, we'll see you next week. Have a great one.
Leave me alone. I'm on the defense. I'm not made of stone. Why doesn't it ever make sense? I'm sick of all this indecision. You're messing with my mind. This ain't no false facade. And this ain't no freak disguise. 'Cause I am for real. You don't know what I feel. My strength is in my will. I cannot wait. I won't be second rate. In for the kill. It's me against the world.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.